Blog Talk Radio.
To the fans and everybody in Gator Nation, I'm sorry. Extremely sorry. You know, we're hoping for an undefeated season. That was my goal. 7-4 is never done here. But I promise you one thing. A lot of good will come out of this. You will never see any player in the entire country play as hard as I will play the rest of the season. And you never see someone push the rest of the team as hard as I will push everybody the rest of the season. And you never see a team play harder than we will the rest of the season. God bless.
Welcome to the Saturday morning wake-up call on this Saturday, December 6, 2008. I'm Cyril Quinn, 30 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. And, of course, that was Florida quarterback and current reigning Heisman Trophy winner Tim Tebow. After Florida loses to Ole Miss back in September, and the reason I played that is because there hasn't been too many defining moments in this college football season. I mean, the Big 12 South has been great. You've had some compelling games there. But for the most part, the season has been, you know, it's been okay. But that was a turning point in this college football season, because after that game, I think, you know, after when Florida lost to Ole Miss in the Swamp, you know, in Florida, I thought to myself, okay, that's a big upset. You know, I saw the press conference after the game. I saw his comments on a highlight show. I didn't think too much of it. But when you see what Florida has done since then, you have to go back to that point. I mean, that was a great act of leadership by Tebow, and the Florida Gators have been an absolute machine. And I mean a machine since that game. They have dominated their opponents. They've beaten it. I mean, these games haven't even been competitive through a quarter, let alone through a half or for a whole game. They've looked every bit of a team that is more than capable of winning a national championship. And certainly one of the reasons why they come into this SEC championship game, the favorites. You know, the last line I saw was 9.5. The line has gotten as high as 10. And that's in spite of the fact that they're taking on a team in Alabama who's ranked number one by the coaches, by the BCS, by the Associated Press, undefeated, and a team that has kind of, I'm not going to say went under the radar, but kind of been overlooked with all the hype that's going around USC, the Big 12 South, you know, the Heisman Trophy, Notre Dame and their whole theatrics. Alabama is a legitimate team. Let me tell you, they're a big physical team. They like to knock you around. Nick Saban is as good as coach as it is in college football. And when everybody points to one way in terms of who's going to win the game, and I've been on that bandwagon before myself many a times. Case in point with the Patriots and Giants, I was right there with the Patriots in terms of them winning that game. But I've seen it too many times before in college football when everybody points to a team winning the game, and what happens is, you know, the other team gets tired of hearing about how they can't win or their team's too fast or too talented. And they turn around and you have an upset. This game, let me tell you something. Alabama wins this game is not an upset. Number one, they match up perfectly against Florida. The physicality that Alabama brings to the table is the kind of team that Florida really does not match up well against. You know, it's power versus speed. And again, in all my years of watching football, college football, pro football, normally power wins. I mean, you want to go back. You know, you want to go back to '88 when you had Penn State, Miami. You had all the flat. You know, had Vinny Testaverde, Heisman winner. Miami had all the great athletes. Penn State just had the, you know, great running game, great defensive line, physical team. And what happened? Then 5 interceptions later, Vinny Testaverde walks out with no national championship. Or even go back to the, you know, Super Bowl, and Buffalo fans will know this very well. High power offense. You're facing a physical giant team. In Super Bowl 20, and what happens? Giants hold the ball for 40 minutes, 20-19, Norwood misses the field goal. Alabama is a physical team. I mean, they have as good as defensive and offensive lines as any team in the country. That combination is probably the best in terms of offensively and defensively with their lines. They can control the ball, keep Tebow off the field, and really push Florida around. I have not seen a team this year punch Florida in the mouth. You know, Florida has went up and down the field. They've, you know, you see them scoring touchdowns left and right. Tebow running for touchdowns left and right. Percy Harvin, who might not play, by the way, and that's another reason why I'm surprised that this line is so high. You know, Harvin running all over the place. They have excellent receivers. They have great, in terms of skill position players, they're as good as there is in college football, along with Oklahoma. But again, I like Alabama in this game. I like Saban in these games. He's great in these championship caliber games. And one thing you will know this about Saban, he will not get out coached in this game. Urban Meyer has won a championship, and I have all the respect in the world for Urban Meyer and what he's done with the Florida program, taking it to a whole nother level from when Spurrier was there. But Saban's a guy who's coached in the NFL. He's been an assistant coach. I mean, he coached under Bill Belichick. So preparation, there isn't anything that Urban Meyer will throw at Nick Saban that he will not be ready for in terms of preparing, in terms of, I don't care, trick plays, whatever they throw at Alabama, they will be ready. So I think this game comes down to a game of, I think Alabama will turn this into a game of physicality where they will knock Florida around and where they will control the game with their lines of scrimmage. Alabama, nobody runs against Alabama, and Alabama runs on everybody. So I would expect a very close game, you know, somewhere, I could see the game getting into the 30s, late, mid-20s, early 30s, low 30s, mid-20s. But you will not see 40 or 50 points put up by Florida in this game. You will not see Florida throwing all over the place. You will not. The spread offense, Alabama's defense, is the kind of defense that can stop a spread offense. Saban can take that thing apart. He can take it apart. I mean, that's an offense that does not match up well against a defensive line like Alabama's. And I think Alabama wins this game. It's too much leaning towards Florida. It's too many people. You would think that Alabama's coming to this game, you know, at 8-4. Nobody's giving Alabama a chance. I just don't see it. I've watched Alabama all season long. We've seen teams get knocked off left and right, but Alabama has been the one team that's been able to stay the one top team. I don't even count the Boise States of the world. Ball State lost. I didn't even count them before. Alabama has been the one top-tier team that has been unblemished. I mean, they're perfect. And that has something to be said at this point in the regular season coming out the SEC. I know the SEC is not what it was, not what we thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season with LSU and Auburn and Tennessee, you know, not being, you know, having off-season, having bad years. But it's still the SEC, and they still, you know, they still put away teams like Georgia, beat LSU, beat Clemson when Clemson was decent opening, you know, in the opening game, which basically set the tone for their season. I like this Alabama team a lot. I've been following them throughout the season. They kind of remind me of the team that won that last Alabama team that won the championship back in 92. You remember with guys like Jay Barker and Sherman Williams and Antonio Langham, George Teague, that great defense. I mean, they have a lot of talent. On both lines of scrimmage with that defense, with that offensive line, that defensive line. So, like Alabama in a close game. And, of course, the other half of the final of college football's Final Four, or college football's version of the Final Four, you'll have Missouri taking on Oklahoma. Listen, I understand that since 1996, Associated Press top three teams are only 5-5 in the Big 12 championships. You've seen a host of upsets in that game, whether it's 98 Kansas State getting picked off. We saw Texas get picked off one year against Colorado. We saw Nebraska get picked off one year. You saw Oklahoma get picked off against Kansas State back in 2003 and still end up playing for, ironically, they still end up playing for a championship, which, you know, was a mystery to me, but, you know, that's how it went down. But I just can't see Missouri even staying in the game with Oklahoma. Oklahoma right now, we talk about explosive offenses. Oklahoma is putting up almost 60 points a game in their last four games. Their offense, from top to bottom, they are the best offense in college football, from top to bottom. When you talk about offensive line, talk about quarterback, talk about receivers they have, tight ends good. Just running backs, I mean, they have the complete package. From an offensive standpoint, they're good enough defensively to a point to where they will force your offense to score 50 or 60 points. I mean, Oklahoma State last week goes out there and puts 41 points on the board and lose, and they lose a game by 20. I mean, what more can you ask your offense to do when you put that many, when you put that amount of points on the board and still come up short? So I like Missouri I like Oklahoma in that game, and if Oklahoma wins, of course, they will advance to a national championship game in Miami. Alabama automatically will advance if they win. There is some question about Florida. I know a couple of people are questioning whether or not if Florida wins, could Texas slip in there, but more than likely. I mean, Texas, Florida is number two in the Associated Press poll. They're number two in the Harris poll. Now, the coaches poll, they're number four, but those two polls, the Associated Press and Harris, they're ranked number two in those particular polls. And the BCS, of course, they're number four. They beat Alabama, which is number one. They will jump Texas without question. They will jump Texas, and they will play for the national championship. So I think you will have a major story on your hands if Florida wins and doesn't play for a championship. So there you have it with your college football for the day. The rest of the games, I know you have championships in different conferences, whether it be the ACC championships in the Big East has yet to be decided. But the rest of them, frankly, don't mean anything. I mean, it is what it is. This is the Final Four of college football as far as the Big East, the Big 12, and the SEC championship. 347-215-6180 is your call-in number. I know last week somebody tried to get through when I was in the middle of the segment. I apologize for not getting to your call, but I definitely encourage you to call at 347-215-6180. Still to come on the wake-up call, I'll have NFL picks after the update. I'll have Inside the Burgundy and Gold, and I also we still have Star of the Week. That's all coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Now, here we go with the update. O.J. Simpson will have to serve at least 9 years in prison for his involvement in the armed robbery and kidnapping at a Las Vegas hotel back in 2007. He's going to have to serve minimum 9 years. He could do up to 33 years. His maximum sentence could be up to 33 years in prison. Greg Maddux will announce his retirement come Monday. Maddux, who pitched for the Dodgers, Padres, Cubs, and Braves, ranks eighth on the all-time list in wins at 355. He also was a four-time Cy Young winner in his 23 years of service. NBA scores. Orlando defeats Oklahoma City 98-89. Big game out of Dwight Howard, 21 points, 23 rebounds. The Lakers edge the Wizards 106-104. Lakers go to 16-2 on the season. Cleveland rolls over Indiana 97-73, despite only 11 points out of LeBron James. Cleveland goes to 16-3 on the season. Boston rolls over Portland 93-78. Boston improves to an NBA best 19-2. Other winners in the NBA included Atlanta, New Jersey, Memphis, Houston, Milwaukee, and Utah. Coming up on a wake-up call, NFL picks, and also Inside the Burgundy and Gold. That's coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Week number 14 in the league where only the strong survive. The NFL, we're into December now. It's money time in the NFL, and this month will decide who, of course, will get into the playoffs and who are jockey for that position to go to Tampa Bay to this year's Super Bowl. Some good games, a couple of key divisional battles, and a turn back the clock game. We'll begin with the Philadelphia Eagles traveling to, of course, Giants Stadium to take on the red-hot New York Giants. The Giants come in at 11-1. They come in playing the best football of any team in the NFL right now, despite all the off-the-field nonsense that's going on with Plaxico Burress. They still remain focused. They still remain focused to keep and still have kept on winning. The line is 7 in this game with Philadelphia. I know Philadelphia played great against Arizona 10 days ago in that Thanksgiving game, but I still do not trust I still don't trust Philadelphia's running attack. I think Philadelphia is still a one-dimensional team. I think asking Donovan McNabb to go out there and beat the New York Giants in Giants Stadium is asking a little too much. Philadelphia, again, I understand Andy Reid's teams have made great runs in December. They've always played well in December and trying to make a run for a playoff. But I just don't see it. I just don't see it. That stadium, I'm telling you, trying to win a game against a quality Giants team in Giants Stadium in December or in January is not the easiest thing in the world. That stadium, those winds get swirling, it's difficult, and your quarterback is very difficult to play in that stadium come December and January. And I would expect the Giants to cover the spread and expect them to find a way to come up with a win in this game. I can see it being close for a half, Philadelphia hanging in with their defense, but come the third and fourth quarter, the Giants will wear down the Eagles with that running attack against that small Eagle defensive line. So I like the Giants in this game. I'd say, 27-17, 31-20, somewhere in that neighborhood. Game number two, it'll be Monday Night Football. Tampa Bay Buccaneers travel down to Carolina to take on the Carolina Panthers. The line is 3 in this game. Carolina's favored by 3, which is basically even because you give 3 points automatically to their home team. I like Carolina in this game, and I do not say it with confidence because I haven't trusted Carolina all season long. Carolina, though, has been great at home. All the NFC South teams have been great at home. You look at the win percentages of the home teams has been just astounding. But I expect this game to be played real close to the vest, 20-17, 17-14, in that neighborhood. The Carolina running game probably will be the difference. I would not be shocked, though. I would not least be surprised if Tampa Bay were to pull this upset and win this game. But I cannot pick them to win this game because of how good Carolina has been at home and with their running game, though. It would not shock me if Tampa Bay were to win this game. But I like Carolina in a very close game. New Orleans takes on the Atlanta Falcons in another key NFC South matchup. New Orleans is favored by 3. It will be at the Superdome in New Orleans. And I like the road team in this game. I think Atlanta and Matt Ryan playing well right now. I like what Michael Turner has done for New Orleans. He's been great this season. And I just don't trust New Orleans' defense. I understand Drew Brees had a great year, and they could throw the ball all over the place against anybody. But the defense just scares me. Drew Brees almost had to play perfect football for New Orleans to even have a chance. And even as great as he's been, that's a lot to ask out of your quarterback week in and week out. I think Atlanta comes up with the upset win, if you want to call it that. I wouldn't even consider it to be an upset, considering how well Atlanta has played this season. They are 8-4 as we speak. But I do like them in this game. I expect this to be a shootout. I think it's 31-27, 35-31, but look for Atlanta to win this game and go to 9-4 on the season. Game of the week and / upset special. And this game, again, brings back a lot of memories for, people who are definitely 40 and over. When you talk Steelers and Cowboys, some of the great Super Bowl moments of all time have been between these two teams, with the Jackie Smith dropping the ball and what have you, the Lynn Swan catch. Before I want to pick Pittsburgh. I think my heart says Pittsburgh, but my gut tells me Dallas. I had to have an upset, and I understand that Dallas's offensive line has been shaky with their tackle situation, and James Harrison and Lamar Woodley are playing great, in particular James Harrison. But I don't know. This morning I really changed my mind with this pick. I mean, I had Pittsburgh win this game. Pittsburgh is favored by 3. I had Pittsburgh win this game, but this morning I changed my mind thinking about this game. I like Dallas's karma right now. I think Dallas has. We talked last week about crisis situations and as far as NFL football teams go and how to survive a crisis situation as far as your team. as far as your team goes. Well, Dallas has survived it. I mean, they've gone through all the nonsense with Terrell Owens and, you know, Tony Romo being injured and Felix Jones being injured and Terrence Newman, all the injuries and just that whole Pac-Man Jones, that whole ordeal. They're 8-4. They're in pretty good position to make the playoffs. And right now their defense is playing well. Romo has seemed to return back to form. He had a great game. He's played very well in the last two weeks. And I understand Pittsburgh's defense is lethal. I mean, Pittsburgh has a dominating defense. It is clearly the best defense in the NFL. But I think Dallas will be able to make enough plays. They will make enough plays to be able to pull out this victory. I like Dallas in this game. I mean, I think it will be a very close game. I think you're talking 2017. I think it'll be a very close game. But I like Dallas in this game. I mean, that's my, you know, I know I could be dead wrong. I could be absolutely dead wrong about this game, but, you know, Dallas is playing well. I mean, you love them. I hope I jinx them from a Redskin perspective. I hope I jinx them. But, you know, you have to be impressed with what you've seen out of Dallas over the last 2 or 3 weeks and them surviving their crisis, you know, them surviving a mid-season crisis. And that's what they had. I mean, that's what they had earlier this season. They looked like a team that had, you know, they looked like a team that was not going to make the playoffs and was headed towards disaster. But they have gotten their act together. They have gotten their act together and have, you know, righted the ship. And I'm gonna be honest with you. They look like the only team right now that's in the NFC that's capable of beating the New York Giants. I mean, that doesn't say a lot about the rest of the NFC. I understand that, but you know, they look like, from a talent standpoint, from a matchup standpoint, they do look like that team, that one team that could give the Giants, that could give the Giants problems. And they, you know, and I hate to bring this up, and I brought this up to a friend, you know, not too long, about a week ago. The Cowboys looked like the Giants of last year. And you remember when Tom Coughlin was basically about to get ran out of town after starting out the season 0-2, down 17-3 in game 3 to the Redskins, about to be 0-3. They come back, win that game, you know, start out the season 6-2, then struggle mid-season, then come back, get themselves into the playoffs. The next thing you know, they're playing for beating Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. I mean, Dallas looks like they look similar to that Giant team. I'm not saying that will happen this year. Let me get that clear. I'm not saying it will happen, but they kind of look like that team that has went through their struggles, but that has righted the ship and is ready to make a big run in the playoffs. So there you go. I have the Giants covering against Philadelphia and winning big versus the Eagles. Carolina getting by Tampa Bay. Atlanta, if you want to call it an upset, knocking off New Orleans in New Orleans, and Dallas in what would be an upset, defeating the Pittsburgh Steelers at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. So your week 14 picks in this NFL season. Still to come on the wake up call, I have top stories of the week, I have star of the week, I have the inside, the burgundy and gold, and much, much more coming up on wake up call. 53 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Here's the update. OJ Simpson will have to serve at least 9 years in prison for his involvement in an armed robbery and kidnapping at a Las Vegas hotel back in 2007. He could do up to much as 33 years maximum. Greg Maddux will announce his retirement come Monday. Maddux, who is 43 years old, ranks eighth on the all-time list in terms of wins at 355 and is a four-time Cy Young winner. Maddux, of course, pitched for the Dodgers, Cubs, Braves, and Padres as well. NBA scores. Orlando defeats Oklahoma City 98-89. Dwight Howard has a big game, going 21 points and 23 rebounds. The Lakers edge the Wizards 106-104. Lakers improved to 16-2. Cleveland defeats Indiana 97-73, despite only 11 points out of LeBron James. Cleveland goes to 16-3 on the season. Boston defeats Portland 93-78. They improved to an NBA best 19-2 on the season. Ray Allen scores 19 points. Other winners in the NBA include Atlanta, New Jersey, Memphis, Houston, Milwaukee, and Utah as well. Inside the Burger and Gold is brought to you by fans who are tired of seeing the Redskins run the same offensive plays. When are we going to switch it up just a little bit? Well, here we go. 7-5. Where do you begin with the Redskins and with how they're playing right now? The 7-5, they are one game out of the playoff hunt behind both Dallas and Atlanta, who are 8-4. And, you know, to watch them play offense over the course of the last, I'd say, 6 or 7 weeks, it's extremely painful. Extremely painful. You know, if you're a Redskins fan, even if you're a football fan, if you live in the Metro DC area and have to watch this team, whether you're rooting for the Redskins or not, to watch this offense on the field, it is sickening. I mean, you look at the Redskins' numbers offensively. Redskins have scored 208 points total this season. That comes out to about 17 points a game. Only Detroit, Oakland, St. Louis, and Cincinnati have scored less points than Washington. Those are, of course, four of the worst teams in football. And it's the same thing every week. You know, you see the Redskins do the same plays. Their offense is so easy to defend. All you have to do is slow down Clinton Portis, defend one receiver in Santana Moss, and that's it. I mean, they have zero creativity from an offensive standpoint. Last week against the Giants, they had one play where they got the touchdown off the reverse, off the reverse score scored by, of course, rookie Devin Thomas, and that was it. I mean, you do a reverse, you score a touchdown off it, yet you don't go back to it, not once over the course of the rest of the game. And I don't understand it. I can understand Zorn realizes that he does not have the talent to run his entire offense, to use his entire playbook. And I understand that. But at some point, you got to swallow your pride and grit, get a little creative here. I mean, every other team, I've seen about 80% of NFL teams use the Wildcat offense. The Redskins have, you know, you have Anton Randle-L, who is probably the best non-quarterback, you know, one of the best throwing non-quarterbacks in the league. I mean, the guy, you look at his completion rate, you know, his completion percentage, and, you know, good things happen when he throws the ball, puts it that way. But I believe he's 20 or 25. His rating is just, he has a ridiculously high rating, and he makes great, I mean, he's a former quarterback, of course, at Indiana. He makes great decisions with the ball, so you don't have to worry about him turning over the ball. Can we at least put him in? I mean, the Wildcat offense would be tailor-made for him. Can we at least run it at least once or twice a game? Can the Redskins do a flea flicker for once? I mean, this is something to mix it up a little bit. Defensive coordinators are having a field day against the Redskins offense because it's so easy to defend. And again, Jim, if you're Jim Zorn, you got to swallow your pride here and make the adjustments. And, you know, Jim Zorn keeps saying it, and he uses this same line week in, week out. You know, the player, you know, we like our game plan, we like our adjustments, but the players are not executing. Well, Jim, how do you get the players to execute? What are you doing to help the players execute better? What is happening in weeks? What happened in, say, weeks 2 through 5 or 2 through 4 that has not happened in the last 6 or 7 weeks? I mean, the Redskins went on that four-game winning streak. You saw, you know, you saw all kinds of execution. You saw them being creative. You saw some different things. You saw Clinton Portis running all over the place. You saw deep passes. But again, the NFL is a league of adjustments. Defensive coordinators have adjusted to Jim Zorn, and he has not reacted. He has not made a counter adjustment in terms of what he's doing. And the Redskins offense has been, again, anemic, to say the least. You look at the Red last three games at home. In their last three home games, the Redskins have zero, you know, I count them, zero offensive points in the second half of those games. Not a safety, not a field goal, nothing. zero offensive points in three home games in the second half. Do you know how hard that is to do? At least you figure you would fall into a field goal by accident, accidentally. Some other things that came out this weekend as far as the Redskins goes, and you knew this was a matter of time as the offense, you know, sputters along. Enough already about Todd Collins. Todd Collins had a good run last season with the Redskins making the playoffs, played well, but he is far from the answer in terms of the Redskins getting to the playoffs this year. Todd Collins is 37 years old, he's been in the league 14 years. And there's a reason why he's only made in 14 years 44 starts as a quarterback. A majority of those starts are made when he was with Buffalo back in the mid-90s. He's not any good. I mean, it's just that simple. Guys, you know, NFL coaches there's a reason why guys are backup quarterbacks. There's a reason. Most of them cannot play at a level to make them starters. That's why you have second string, third string, sometimes fourth string. So, I mean, enough already with Todd Collins. Jason Campbell is your quarterback, pure and simple. And it's not like Campbell – listen, Campbell's play has slipped in the last 6 weeks. But, you know, he hasn't gotten a lot of help from the running game, and he hasn't gotten a lot of help from just from the play calling. And he hasn't gotten a lot of help, frankly, from the offensive line. I mean, how many times has Campbell been sacked or hit or hurried to throw the ball over the course of the last 6 weeks? So, to me, it's more about those other factors than it is about Jason Campbell. I would say there's one thing about Jason Campbell is I do think that his decision making has slipped considerably in the last 6 weeks. I thought the first half of the season he did a great job at managing the game. He was managing the game as well as any quarterback in the league over the first 8 weeks. But in the last 6 weeks, he has not made the greatest decisions. But that doesn't mean you put him on the bench for Todd Collins or Cole Brennan or any other guy the Redskins have on their roster who play quarterback. Those are only two. I mean, you can't. He's your guy. Yeah, he has to take his lumps. I mean, Eli Manning. You know, unless you're Dan Marino or Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady, it's going to take 2 to 3 to 4 years for a guy to develop. And the guy, I mean, he's in his seventh system in the last 8 years. He doesn't have, you know, he has limited options as far as offensively. The Redskins have one receiver. They have one receiver to throw to. You take away Santana Moss, and that's it. That's it. I mean, Devin Thomas, Malcolm Kelly, and Fred Davis between them have done absolutely nothing as far as catching the ball. They've done nothing. I don't blame Fred Thomas, by the way, because he shouldn't have got drafted here. But Malcolm Kelly and Devin Thomas, you know, they have wasted two second round picks with their production this year. They've been anemic to say the least. So the Redskins going to tomorrow night's game, 7-5 against a very improved Baltimore offense. And you know, when you look at Baltimore, it makes you sick as a Redskins fan because Baltimore, when you compare Baltimore's offense to the Redskins' offense, Baltimore has scored 292 points. Flacco's played well. And you look at the personnel, Baltimore does not have as good personnel as Washington has. You want to talk about quarterback, running back, wide receiver, offensive line, tight end, all across the board, Washington has better talent. But yet, Baltimore, you see Baltimore doing reverses, you see Baltimore in the wildcat offense, you see Cam Cameron doing creative things to get points on the board. And for Baltimore to have scored 84 more points than the Washington Redskins is just is a disgrace from a Redskins perspective. There's no way they should be getting outscored by almost a touchdown per game by the Baltimore Raven offense. There's no way. That shouldn't happen based on the differences in personnel. So Baltimore comes into this game very much in a playoff hunt and very much in a hunt for a division title. Baltimore probably is going to have to finish a one game ahead of Pittsburgh to win that division title based on the fact that Pittsburgh is undefeated within the division, and also Pittsburgh has already beat Baltimore once and has a better conference record as well. So it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough game tomorrow for the Redskins to win going down to that stadium that is not an easy place to play, especially at night. They have a great crowd. Redskins have been bad on – in primetime games this year as it is, you know, Dallas, Pittsburgh, and the Giants have all been losses. So it's going to be the Redskins had their work cut out for them. I expect a close game. I expect a 20-17, 17-14 type game. This is a game that's going to be decided by, you know, probably whoever wins the turnover battle. I mean, that's how close and evenly matched these two teams are. But Baltimore clearly is ahead of the Redskins in terms of what they're doing. And there's no question about it, especially from the offensive perspective. Coming up, still to come on the wake-up call, I have Star of the Week, and also we'll go over Stories of the Week. That's coming up, and much, much more on the wake-up call. Here's the update. And this update is brought to you by fans who are confused on how Texas quarterback Colt McCoy could be voted Associated Press Big 12 Player of the Year and not make first team All Big 12. That honor, of course, went to Oklahoma quarterback Sam Bradford. Enough said. I mean, I don't know what the Associated Press was thinking, but they did what they did. O.J. Simpson will have to serve at least 9 years in prison for his involvement in an armed robbery and kidnapping at a Las Vegas hotel back in 2007. He could do up to 33 years in jail as well. Greg Maddux will announce his retirement come Monday. Maddux, who was an 18-time Gold Glove winner, pitched for the Padres, Dodgers, Braves, and Cubs, all in his 23 year career. Maddux ranks eighth on the all-time wins list at 355, and also was a four-time Cy Young Award winner. NBA scores: Orlando defeats Oklahoma City 98-89. Dwight Howard goes for 21 points and 23 rebounds. The Lakers edge Washington 106-104. Lakers improved to 16-2 on the season. Cleveland runs over Indiana 97-73. LeBron James, despite only 11 points out of LeBron James. Boston smashes Portland 93-78. Boston improves to an NBA best 19-2. Other winners in the NBA included Atlanta, New Jersey, Memphis, Houston, Milwaukee, and Utah as well. Again, coming up on the Saturday morning wake up call, I am your host, Cyril Quinn. We will have Star of the Week and also Stories of the Week.
If you are who you say you are,
it is time for Star of the Week, and today kind of shortened the list a little bit. I mean, for the past couple of weeks I've been having about five people, but today I only have three people that really stood out this week to me. Number one, I have Michael Phelps. Phelps, of course, was named Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year, and the talk that you heard from all the writers and reports is that it wasn't even close. I mean, this was almost a no-brainer. Phelps, of course, won eight gold medals in the Beijing Olympics and just broke all kinds of records. Now, probably with 14 gold medals, ranks number one all time in terms of gold medals in the Olympics. And Phelps, listen, what he did in the Olympics is just something that you'll never forget. I mean, he was clearly the star of the Olympics. He clearly defined the Beijing Olympics without question. And it was one of those once in a lifetime accomplishments that you'll see out of an individual athlete. Number two, I have Rajon Rondo, the Boston Celtics point guard had a big game against Indiana, going for 16 points, 17 assists, and 13 rebounds. Rondo has played very well this year. He's been one of the main reasons, other than the big three, that the Celtics are off to a fast start at 19-2. His shot still has something to be left to be desired in terms of his three-point shot, but hey, who needs your point guard shooting threes when you got Ray Allen or Paul Pierce or Eddie House? He does what's asked by him by Doc Rivers. The guy gets in the lane. He's an excellent defensive player as far as being off the ball, and he does a little bit of everything. He's developed into one of the better rebounding guards in the league. That's without question. And he's played great. I mean, he's having a tremendous year for the Boston Celtics. And number three, I have Kobe Bryant, who against the Indiana Pacers in a loss, by the way, had 28 points, but became the second fastest player to ever reach 22,000 points. Excuse me, the second youngest player to reach 22,000 points behind the late and great Wilt Chamberlain. And listen, Kobe's 31 years and Chamberlain beat him by one day, ironically. Bryant is 30 years old, and if he plays on his current pace, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's scoring record has about 38,000 points. He has an outside chance. He has a decent chance at breaking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record, depending on how long he wants to play. I really think that if he hangs around and plays until he's 37, 38 years old, that he will break that record. He would have to average about 24 points a game for the next, I'd say probably for the next 6 to 8 years, around 24 points a game. It is certainly not out of the realms of possibility that he can accomplish that, especially with the way the NBA rules are designed to help, you know, point the perimeter players. You can't even touch perimeter player, a point guard or two guard without a foul call. So, you know, he has a chance. He does have an outside chance to break that record. Now, again, I have to say outside chance because he is still 16,000 points away. That is a lot of points. I mean, 16,000 points is there are guys who will go their entire basketball careers without scoring a total of 16,000 points. So, still has a ways to go, but it's certainly not out of the realms of possibility for one Kobe Bryant. Coming up on the Saturday morning wake up call, I have stories of the week. You know, we'll deal with Plessico, we'll deal with the Juice, and we'll deal with a coach that should have been fired. That will be coming up on Stories of the Week. We are 12 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Call in at 347-215-6180. Is the phone number. Again, 347-215-6180. Update time. This update is brought to you by fans who are tired of hearing about how good the New York Giants are. Let them repeat it as champs before we crown them. And I will get to that. If I have time in the program, I will get to why Giant fans should not feel so overconfident based on recent NFL history. So if we have time, we'll certainly get to that. Coming update time, O.J. Simpson will have to serve at least nine years in prison for his involvement in an armed robbery and kidnapping at a Las Vegas hotel back in 2007. He could do up to 33 years in prison. Greg Maddux will announce his retirement on Monday. Maddux, the 43-year-old Dodgers starter, ranks eighth all-time on the all-time wins list at 355. Maddux won 4 Cy Youngs and also 18 gold gloves in his 23-year Major League career. NBA scores. Orlando defeats Oklahoma City 98-89. Orlando improves to 15-5 on the season. Dwight Howard goes for 21 points and 23 rebounds. The Lakers edge out Washington 106-104. Lakers improve to 16-2. Cleveland runs over Indiana 97-73, despite LeBron James being held down to just a season low of 11 points. Cleveland goes to 16-3 on the season. The Celtics run over Portland 93-78. Ray Allen has scored 19 points. Boston improves to an NBA best 19-2. Atlanta, New Jersey, Memphis, Houston, Milwaukee, and Utah were your other winners in last night in the NBA. So there you go. There you go with your NBA. Stories of the week. Four. Now I can include four with this latest hockey story with the Sean Avery ordeal. But three stories really stood out to me. Number one, of course, you have Plasko Burris, who on Monday was charged with two counts of weapons possession of a weapon without a license. And he was suspended 4 games by the Giants and placed on the non-football injury list, which, of course, means that he's done for the playoffs. He could face up to 3.5 to 15 years in prison. Listen, you know, first of all, the Giants did absolutely what they had to do. I mean, you cannot I wouldn't want him nowhere near my team. You can't control Tom Coughlin, Jerry Reese, cannot control guys talking on the phone with him or, you know, him visiting another teammate's place or then going to his place or whatever. But you can't keep him out of your locker room. And at this point, you have to keep him away from your team. You're trying to win a Super Bowl. You are the odds-on favorites to winning another Super Bowl. You can't have this guy around. That's all there is to it. You put himself in the position. It is one of the dumbest acts, and that's saying a lot in today's athletes, but this is one of the dumbest things you'll ever see. I mean, you have to be carrying an unlicensed gun in your sweatpants pocket going to a club. Just it makes zero sense to me. It's worse than Michael Vick. It's worse than Michael Vick because despite the fact that Vick is in jail right now and he probably will lose more money than Tussle Burris will ever make, despite that fact, he didn't put his life or the lives of others in jeopardy. And I'm sorry to all you animal lovers out there. I will never equate animal life to a human life. I'm sorry. And I love dogs. I love pit bulls, just like you do, if you are a dog lover. A human life and animal life are no comparison, of course. But you know, here you got a guy in Tusco Birds who put. I mean, if that gun goes off in the wrong place, and you kill somebody. It's just that simple. You carry a loaded gun in your sweatpants pocket. At least, I can't imagine what thugs all over the world are saying right now. You know, thugs all over the world, all over the country, saying this guy gives up a bad name. He's not a thug. You know, a real thug. A real thug would have been smart enough that to not put himself in harm's way, to not shoot himself. But again, he deserves everything he gets as far as the suspension goes. The Giants had to make the move. They had to do this. It was a no-brainer. And Burris now will have to sit and wait as his football career is in jeopardy without question. And listen, I want to see New York now. Michael Bloomberg comes out there talking to us. Well, we're going to hold him to the same standards that we would hold any other citizen if this case were to take place. You know what? Good man, I want to see Plaxico Burress go to jail. I mean, he had an unlicensed gun. New York has stringent laws on carrying unlicensed weapons, guns. And, you know, he should do 3-4 years in prison. So I want to see New York, you know, put his money where his mouth is. As far as this goes, I mean, they come out talking tough. He should go to jail for 3 to 4 years. Bottom line. So we will see how that case. I mean, how that plays out. Again, his career. If he does go to jail and is out, I mean, if he's out 2 or 3 years, his career is all right. It will be over. He's about 29, 30 years old. He's a receiver. And his career he will basically be done. But you know, who knows in the NFL? They give players second chances all the time. So it definitely wouldn't shock me if he were to come back and another team gave him a chance to play again. I mean, it just, if the NFL teams feels like that you can help their teams win a Super Bowl, they'll, outside of committing murder, you will be on the field. I mean, it's just that's just how the NFL goes. But, I wouldn't have him nowhere near my team. I'll tell you that. He's too much of a headache, you know, being late to meetings. He's completely shown that he's just capable of just self-destructing. He's just, you know, he does an interview with Pam Oliver saying that I'm my own worst enemy. Basically telling you that he's crazy. He's talking in third person, so I wouldn't want to have any part of Plaxico Burress if I'm another NFL team, despite what happened, despite all his talents, and we know how great a receiver he is when he's on the field and when he's focused. O.J. Simpson, of course, will have to do at least 9 years in prison. He can do anywhere up to 33 years maximum for the armed robbery and also kidnapping, of course, in that Las Vegas hotel back in 07. Here's what O.J. said, and this will tell you all you need to know about how just out there right now O.J. is. I didn't want to steal anything from anyone. I'm sorry, sorry. Those were his quotes, choking back tears in the courtroom as he got his sentence. I don't somebody calls and tell me, is it just me, or when you come in with masks and guns, I mean, I'm trying to figure it out. When you come in with a mask, with masks and the guns, you're not trying to steal anything, or you didn't want to steal anything. Somebody help me out in trying to understand this. Obviously, O.J. Simpson is distraught, and I hate to say it, but you know, turnabout is fair play. I mean, he should have went to jail. Let's be honest, he should have went to jail 13 years ago. Now, this doesn't make up for Ronald Goldman or Nicole Brown Simpson by any stretch of imagination, but this is justice. I mean, this guy has been a disgrace to me, an embarrassment to not only the African-American race, but he's been an embarrassment to the NFL. He's been he's a joke. I mean, he's just a big-time joke, and he deserves to spend every moment in jail that he can spend, whether it's 9 years, whether it's 15 years, whether it's 33 years, he deserves it, pure and simple. I don't wish death upon anybody, and I never would, but, he deserves to be in jail. And all those they had to do was to sit back and play golf, you know, for the rest of his life. He could have toured the finest golf courses around the country and just laid back, but no, you know, he has to be OJ and go just do something dumb, like trying to break into a Las Vegas hotel to steal some memorabilia that he claims that was his, that probably memorabilia that probably had been auctioned off, that he probably had auctioned off trying to take back the Goldman family for their civil suit, which is about $33-34 million. So it's a sad ending, but it's probably the proper ending. I hate to say it, but it probably is the proper ending in this whole ordeal that's spanned now now 14 years. I mean, you had the whole the murder when he killed the two people or allegedly killed the two people back in 1994, now 2008. So this thing has been ongoing 14, 15 years, and it finally seems to have come to an abrupt end with his sentencing come this week. Charlie Rice, in a lighter note, and maybe it's not light if you're a Notre Dame fan, Charlie Rice will be retained as Notre Dame head coach in a 2-hour and 15-minute meeting with our athletic director, Jack Swarbrick. It was decided that Weiss would keep his position. Weiss is just only in 4 years at Notre Dame. Weiss is 28-21. He has not won a bowl. He has not won a bowl game. He has 3-9 last season. I don't see how in the world you keep this guy as your head coach. You know, number one, Notre Dame needs to recalibrate their expectations. I understand they have 11 national championships, but when Notre Dame was winning championships with Lou Holtz, when they were going to bowl games on New Year's Day, year in, year out, they were doing it with players who were great players, but whose academics were not up to what Notre Dame standards are right now, the Tony Rices of the world. Right now, Notre Dame wants the great student and the great football player, but newsflash, Notre Dame, that does not exist. You know, the modern roles of the world are 1 in 10,000, or 1 in a million. Those guys, are not falling off trees. If you want blue chip, top notch recruiters, you know, you might have to take some students with whose GPAs are not, GPAs struggle to crack 2.2, 2.3. And that's all there is to it. If you look at Oklahoma's graduation rate, Oklahoma's only graduating, was 23% of players, or something like that. I mean, it's a ridiculous number, but it is what it is. But with that said, you look at these recruiting services numbers that they give on recruiting classes. Notre Dame has had top five recruiting classes the last 3 or 4 years. So which is it? Is it Weiss's not getting the most out of his talent, or is it the fact that these recruiting classes, that Notre Dame's recruiting classes have been overrated? I would lean towards Weiss not getting the most out of his players. I mean, Weiss, again, he's been awful. I mean, how many years are you going to give this guy to try to turn the program around? I understand you paid him a ton of money. You gave him that. The boosters and the powers of be have nobody but to blame but themselves. I mean, you gave Charlie Weiss 7 games into that 2005 season, a 10-year extension at $3 to $4 million a year, which made no. Let him win a championship first. Let him at least win one championship before you give him that kind of extension or that kind of deal. Like nobody was gonna snatch Charlie Rice away from you. Trust me. The guy is just not a coach. He's not a college. He's not a college coach. He's not. He's not a head coach. Bottom line. And I think the sooner that they get rid of him, the sooner the better off the Notre Dame program will be. In order to turn that program around, you need a Bob Stoops, you need a Nick Saban, you need an Urban Meyer. You need that caliber of coach in order to get Pete Carroll. The problem is all those guys are in great situations and would not. There's no way they would leave their situations for Notre Dame. There's all there is to it. So Notre Dame is in a tough situation, but again, the best thing for their program to do would be to cut loose with Charlie Rice. You look at the season where Charlie Rice had good records. I know they had good records under Rice. He began 10-3 and 9-3. Those were with Ty Willingham's players, whether it be Jeff Samardzija, Stovall, and Brady Quinn. Those were with both. All those recruits were Tyrone Willingham's recruits. When Rice started bringing in his players, the records started steadily declining. So that should tell you all you need to know about Charlie Rice. So today we had talked about the SEC championship, Alabama, Florida. I like Alabama. The NFL picks, Pittsburgh, Dallas. I like Pittsburgh. I like Dallas for the upset. Of course, I rant and raved about the Redskins. I mean, about their lack of offensive creativity and about the fact that fans who out there who think that Ty Collins is the answer, that you need their head examined. So we talked about that. Stories of the week, Plexico Burress, O.J. Simpson. On Star of the Week, Michael Phelps. I didn't choose a Star of the Week, but I would have to say Michael Phelps based on his year and what he did in the Olympics and also getting Sportsman of the Year for Sports Illustrated. So I'll be back, of course, next week, same time, same place, 10:30. Hopefully we'll get to chew on some baseball as the winter meetings will begin on December 8th, coming up Monday. Hopefully one of these guys finally signs a contract, whether it be Manny Ramirez or CeCe Sabathia or A.J. Burnett. So we'll chew on some of that. We'll recap these college football games. We'll look ahead to week 15 in the NFL as the NFL season starts to wind down. So we'll do that. NBA Beat will be back, and we'll also add another segment to the program. Again, if you want to get in, the call number is 347-215-6180. I've enjoyed this last hour with you. I'll see you next week. I will see you next week. So long. I'm going to go to the hospital.
you.